Belgian pioneer Pierre Bourque joins me on the line from Toronto. Since 1998, his website Bourque News Watch has been an invaluable, remarkable, enviable, lauded, and sometimes derided compendium of breaking news, up-to-the-minute headlines, and web links for millions of Canadians each month. Pierre Bourque is also an accomplished artist, and pierrebourque.com is the website for his artwork. Please welcome to the commentary.ca, Pierre Bourque. Good morning, Mr. Bourque.
Hi, Joseph. Great to be with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. The art thing, I did not know that until I did my research for our chat today. You've been an artist for how long?
I started in the early 80s. I went to some classes at the Ottawa School of Art, and I had a chance later on to be on the board of directors of the School of Art there. But I've been painting through that period of time, and right up till now, it's something that I love to do at every opportunity.
And I guess that's your passion in life, is it not?
Well, I think my internet business is my passion, but certainly my the passion that I've developed over the years for my painting, my art, is something that I find very important, and it's a great place to go and clear the mind.
And I'm told that you have shows coming up in Martha's Vineyard, do you?
Yes, I do. I have a one-month solo show happening on Martha's Vineyard from May 1st to the 31st. It's going to be my second solo show. And I've also got some gallery representation on that island off Cape Cod, as well as in California and in Ottawa.
Now, you live in Ottawa, or do you live on Martha's Vineyard?
I live in Ottawa.
You live in Ottawa. Before we get into the internet side of things and the current events and stuff, the other things that I wanted to ask you about were race car driving. Do you still do that?
No, I just the only race car driving I do these days is I sit on my Lazy Boy and I watch it on the big screen.
Ah, you're a NASCAR dad, are you?
I am a NASCAR dad, yes, sir.
And the politics. You served on Ottawa's municipal council, did you?
Yes, I was a Ottawa alderman, a city councillor, as well as a regional councillor. Back before amalgamation a few years ago, there were both levels of government, and the regional one encompassed, I think, some 13 municipalities, including Ottawa. So I had that, and I also ran for parliament in East End, Montreal, in 1993.
And reading the Rachel Marsden piece about you in the Hill Times, you don't rule out ever going back to political life again, do you?
Oh, I think never say never is the rule of thumb on that one.
Talk about the current political climate. You obviously pay attention to current events and things like that. That's what the site is all about. What do you think are the stories that resonate with the Canadian public at this point? Is it our thoughts, of course, are geared towards Mayor Thorpe, Alberta, today. But what do you think are the big issues that Canadians are thinking about, that they're talking about?
I think in politics it all revolves around two things that sometimes are not as obviously interchangeable as they might logically be, but that has to do with leadership and integrity. And I think at the top of all political parties there's a leadership question that has to do with a variety of variables, but that's certainly something, at least from a political perspective, that always catches my interest, and it's a fascinating thing to be in Ottawa, to live in Ottawa, although I'm in Toronto today, but to live in Ottawa and to watch the passing parade of political players that come and go in that city.
Were you in Toronto for the Liberal policy convention, or...?
The policy convention was in Ottawa this past week.
Oh, it was. Okay, I thought it was in
Toronto. But, you know, I watched it on television.
Is there anything of consequence that came out of that?
A couple of things. You know, I think on one hand, the fact that the Prime Minister got an 88% leadership support was solid. By the same token, you wonder who those 12% people are and what are they doing in the backgrounds. What kind of nefarious skullduggery is underway that we'll hear about at some point in the near future. The other thing, too, is that I saw that there were a number of politicians, political players, that have either given up the ghost in terms of current elected office, or they may still be involved peripherally as backbench MPs, but they're hopeful that someday to claim the leadership of the Liberal Party. I'm thinking of the likes of Maurizio Bevilacqua, who's a Toronto-based MP, as well as other people like Martin Cochon, John Manley, and some of the others that I saw parading themselves around through television interviews and trying to get some face time. There's that question going on as well.
If in fact Martin will be succeeded soon, will there be an election soon, do you think?
I think there could be an election anywhere from 12 to 24 months right now. I think they're coming off a high off this weekend, albeit a somewhat muted one. It's just that there isn't really any obvious opposition within the Liberal Party. There may be some covert stuff going on, and I don't doubt that. But in terms of overtness, there isn't. But perhaps more importantly, if you look across the floor of the House of Commons, regardless of what political party you tend to support in general, there isn't a very concerted effort yet underway to undermine the Liberals. We saw that with the support for the budget that's come from various sources or various parties on the floor. So if there was a vehement opposition, if for whatever reason the Gomery inquiry caught fire and suddenly all the opposition leaders were on their feet denouncing the incumbents and calling for an election, trying to build heat on that, that might be something that that would lend to an earlier election call than otherwise might be the case.
What about the Conservatives? Is Stephen Harper safe, do you think?
I think he's got some issues. The fact that for the better part of the last year or so, he hasn't really had much of a profile, and he certainly hasn't capitalized on any of the foibles and mistakes that the Liberals have cast upon themselves. And, and as much as there are things within the Stephen Harper leadership that I like and admire, I find fascinating, I still think that there's a surprising lack of desire to go for the jugular. And I think in politics, particularly when it comes to Liberals, if you want to usurp their position of power, you've got to go for the jugular.
But what about Gomery? Are you finding that people care about this, or do they think it's a boondoggle?
I think you've hit it right there, Joseph. I think some people are fascinated by it. I did watch a fair amount of it last week, and certainly in the case of this ad man, Lafleur, it was quite fascinating. This guy doesn't remember anything. He doesn't know who he talked with. Certainly a great stonewaller at best, but I think people are fascinated with it in sense that it's a tremendous soap opera, but by the same token, I think that we've come to expect that of certain elements of politics, that you're going to get this cronyism that's going to go on. Whether or not that catches fire, I don't think so. I think this thing has dragged on so long. The heat of the moment within ad scam, as it's now commonly called, was a year or two ago.
Same-sex marriage, is that going to be a big deal in the coming year?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think Canadians generally are either tolerant by the most part or intolerant in some areas, and I don't think in general that's going to come to a major clash.
We're talking with Pierre Bourque of Bourque Newswatch, Bourque.com, PierreBourque.com for his artwork. Let's move to the Internet side of things now. You're often compared to Matt Drudge. What do you make of that? Do you like it? Do you dislike it? Or?
I don't mind that. If it helps people understand what it is that I do because they have a greater awareness of what's happening in the American side with Matt Drudge's site, I don't mind that at all. By the same token, he's purely American-centric, and some might say he's more right-wing than he necessarily needs to be, so he caters to a certain side of the political spectrum. But I certainly admire the audience that he's built for himself. He's a media powerhouse in his own right, and if there's any comparisons in terms of what I've done here in the Canadian marketplace, I certainly appreciate it.
When did Bourque Newswatch begin, and are you surprised at the impact and the success that it has had?
Yeah, January 1998. I was doing a lot of journalism. I was writing a weekly column for the Hill Times, which was a Canadian parliamentary newspaper. I was also writing about the Internet in a number of publications. I've written for Maclean's. I think I was the first person to write a major piece about the Internet in Maclean's magazine. It was 4 or 6 pages long. I've written stuff that's appeared in the front page of the National Post and a variety of other publications. I don't have a journalism background, but I just loved writing about the Internet and exploring it and talking about it, and I continuously included my email address with all of my news reports. So the readership thought that it was novelty for one thing, so let's contact the writer, and they might be satisfied with what I was writing, but they wanted to exchange ideas, or perhaps they took exception to something I was writing, and they wanted to pass along their comments in that regard. But that established an ongoing dialogue that I took to the next level, which was simply I started to gather my favorite places to go on the Internet, which for the most part were news-related. I put them all on one website, and I started to refer people to that website as a resource tool. And, you know, one thing led to another, and two people found it useful. They told two of their friends, who told two of their friends, and so on.
How much a part of your life is it? Are you married to the computer? Are you constantly updating it?
Yeah. Well, you know, Joseph, I'm not a computer guy. I'm an internet guy, and so I have an Apple, a Macintosh, because it's about as easy as I can figure a computer to be. I also have a BlackBerry that's with me 24/7. But that being said, the work I do online is the first thing I do every morning. It's the last thing I do every night, and I do it continuously through the course of the day.
Is it rewarding for you?
Absolutely. I mean, I find it extremely satisfying and rewarding. And, you know, to the extent that now I've got a huge audience, that is something that I market to advertising agencies, to advertisers, to messaging agencies, to public relations and government relations firms, and to government itself. It's become a great conduit for those who hope to get their message across to whatever audience they're specifically focused at getting.
With a large audience, do you think you have influence?
I think in sense that, well, I don't know. I hope that people, when they come to my site, they find it useful. But when you come to my site, you're really going to someone else's site. You come to my site, and then you leave it, and you go elsewhere. All I ask is that they come back. I don't necessarily ask that they agree with the headlines I may be choosing or the wording I use for an individual story, but I just hope they find it a good resource. So that being said, I'm hopeful that the audience will continue to grow as it has been doing pretty much month after month after month since it began. But I don't know, in terms of influence, I suppose that's in the eye of the beholder.
Do you get a lot of flack for the choice of articles that you link or the headlines that you write?
From time to time, yeah. It's funny, people who are very much supportive of a particular political position, if a headline to a story happens to relate more favorably to the opposing point of view, then you certainly hear about it. But that's just part of the game.
About the success of your site, about Drudge's site, about other blogs especially, do you think that's indicative of the state of the media in this country, on this continent, that your sites are so, that your site in particular in the Canadian context is so successful?
That's a good point. I think that, you know, for one thing, all news is subjective, whether it's coming from the CBC, the Globe and Mail, or a small newspaper in northern Alberta. You know, everybody has their own position as to what they think is going to be news on any given day, and they their own perceptions as to what side of a given story is the real one. But that being said, what I'm providing is choice, and I think that's the one thing that most major news organizations are not providing. I mean, they provide their subjective viewpoints. They provide their narrow casting of stories that they themselves choose should be the stories of the day. In my case, I'm saying, hey, as long as you come to my site, you're going to find the wide variety of viewpoints. You're going to find access within one or two clicks to a huge amount of stories, regardless of what your particular interest in news is. And, you know, if we were to compare ourselves, if four or five of us were sitting around over glasses of milk or beer or whatever it may be, and we were to say, you know, what's important to you in your day-to-day life, I think each one of us might have a sequence, you know, our top 10 major news items that they may not necessarily all agree, so long as they represent our personal qualities of life and our personal personalities.
I'm talking to Kevin Newman in an hour. Do you think that in his case, the Can West situation, do you think that convergence is a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
I greatly admire what Leonard and David Asper have built, and what they've done, what they received from their father, and what they've been able to build, and what they hope to build. And so I'm very, very admiring of that. That being said, though, I think that their online business is a disaster, and I've shared that impression with them personally.
You said you wrote a couple of books about the internet and government back in the 1990s. Did you think that the internet would be of such consequence to the political world?
I always thought that it would really change the way things were going to be waged in a variety of areas of society, be that business, politics, entertainment, sports, and so on. And that's certainly been the case. I think we still have so much more to learn. And my timeline horizons with respect to how the internet is going is never more than 8 weeks or so. I never looked too further than that. And I, back then, I always thought that when the population, the general population, got access to themselves in terms of being able to share ideas, being able to organize loosely in terms of around issues or around like-minded circumstances, that would be a powerful political tool into itself. And we're starting to see that quite a bit.
April 1st, 2002, you ran a headline on your site saying that Paul Martin was to retire. A lot of people believe that. They didn't really look at the calendar and note the significance of the day. But that was caused quite a bit of a stir, did it not?
Absolutely. The Canadian dollar lost a fair amount of value that morning because of the fact that somebody who was a prominent currency commentator in the global currency marketplace came across my headline and took it as being de facto truth. I was only ahead of my time by a few months because he actually did resign. But yeah, it was just an April Fool joke, and you know that's part of life. The thing is that my website's had an April Fool joke just about every April 1st since its inception, except for a period of time a couple of years ago, a year or two ago, when things were just too sober. I don't know what was going on, the war in Iraq or something, or there was just so much negative going on in the world. I just thought there were too many negative things going on to warrant that kind of a joke.
What were some of the other faux headlines?
Most of them have centered around a prominent politician resigning. I think 2-3 years in a row I kept saying that the Prime Minister Chrétien was resigning. 1 year he was resigning, and a backbencher from the Ottawa area who, you know, nobody would recognize, I said he was assuming interim prime ministership, and that made the papers the next day, so that was kind of funny. But, you know, we're a couple of weeks away from April Fool's again, so we'll have to see what happens.
Covering Ottawa, Drudge is known for his salacious headlines about, you know, Washington sex and the sort. Is Ottawa a little more sober, if you will, than our nation, our Washington neighbors?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the biggest political sex story these days is probably what's happening between Belinda Stronach and Peter McKay, the two colleagues within the Conservative caucus who have found that they share similar thoughts in many areas. But, you know, I think the general population just yawns at that, so I'm not sure. It would have to take something pretty exciting. Although, you know, we all have our interests, our pecuniary interests, so we'll have to see what happens.
And Heard at Highs, that's the gossip feature, I guess, of the site, is it?
Yeah.
And the reaction had from that, people reading that?
Yeah, it took off. That was strange. I think in the space of a few weeks, I started to have thousands of daily visitors to that. And, you know, Highs is a national chain of steakhouses. It was just simply the setting for a variety of political and not so political tidbits that might be shared between people as they cut into their thick, juicy steaks. And but you know, in the last month or so, I haven't had a chance really to update that. But I think it's just on hiatus. It'll come back.
Looking at your crystal ball, what do you think are the stories that we'll be talking about in the next year?
In terms of politics, definitely the leadership within the Liberal Party and the leadership within the Conservative Party. In terms of Jack Layton's situation in the NDP, he'll still be fighting for profile. But I think both Stephen Harper and Paul Martin, more Paul Martin in the sense that given his age and given the next election, it may well be his last stab at running for office. Then we'll start to look at the leadership changes. I think the NHL is going to be a big story. What's happening with that as far as whether their situation will be cleared up. And it's likely the environment may be a big issue, too.
Just about Paul Martin for a sec here. Rafe Mayer in this coast, he's been talking about, he's comparing him to John Turner. There was much expectation when he was a cabinet minister. And then when he assumed the big job, the prime minister's office, he sort of fizzled. And he's Mr. Dithers and all that stuff that they're labeling on him. Was there something just went awry there on the way to 24 Sussex for Paul Martin?
I think a couple of things. Yeah, it may well be that he's more cautious now that he's assumed the prime ministership. He was seeking the job for the sake of having the job as opposed to some grand design to change the world. But he's not really a firebrand in terms of the kind of overt political personality that that, you know, Jean Chrétien in his own way, or Diefenbaker and some of the others have been over the time, you know, somebody that could really be a firecracker to new thoughts, or just the way that messages are disseminated from that political mount. But also, I think it's just, you know, it's just a sign of the times that people are not so much looking for things to be topsy-turvy right now.
Once again, Pierre Bourque, thank you very much for joining us. I quite enjoyed it. And the website is Bourque News Watch. For Bourque News Watch is Bourque.com, and then the artwork is PierreBourque.com. Pierre, thanks again.
Joseph, my pleasure. Take care.
For the commentary, I'm Joseph.